Big show for you here today. It is, of course, the People's Panic Meter, Justin Boone's waiver wire selections. But before that, we got to talk through a big Monday Night Football game, Lions-Ravens. A lot of takeaways on both sides. Two should be really good teams, but one of them absolutely let me down big on Monday night. We'll get into all of that. Then Justin Boone joins for the People's Panic Meter. We got to talk through a lot of Bengals concern after a disastrous week three. It is time to have yet another conversation about Drake London and Jaguars receivers. I got a theme here going on the People's Panic Meter. And then we dive into all the players you need to add off the waiver wire, including a potential guy to spend all of your budget on that Boone thinks you should be bullish with. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. We have the usual People's Panic Meter, the waiver wire to go through on this show, but first, we have to talk through a really big, exciting Monday Night Football game, Lions 38, Ravens 30. This game got weird, I would say, in the fourth quarter, because going into that fourth quarter, I'm thinking, man, this is a really, Troy Aikman described it as a heavyweight fight, which I think was a perfect way to describe it. Like, this was two really good teams kind of on their A game, going back and forth, and a lot of big players stepping up in big moments and putting together really two just, hey, these are teams that didn't play their best football in week one, obviously, for the Ravens, different reasons than for the Lions. And they come out here 1-1, and they're both showing why they're two of the best teams in the NFL. And then the Ravens kind of do what the Ravens do, man. And I hate to say it, but it's kind of a trend. You know, it's in these big games against big, really good teams, they just kind of play like a weird mixture of like too sloppy, but also too tight in these moments too. We'll get into all that from the Ravens perspective, but let's start here as we always do with the winners, and that is the Detroit Lions. And man, I mean, you can basically officially, I think we were ready to do it after week two, but certainly after week three on the road against the Ravens defense that was definitely down players, no question. Kyle Van Noy, Nnamdi Madubuike also out of this game. Totally get that. They're down players, but still, this is a good Ravens defense and a good team overall. On the road, hostile environment, they put up a great offensive performance. You could basically take every like concern that we maybe had lightly in the offseason, certainly after week one. You can just bundle that up, throw it in the trash. Doesn't matter. These are the Detroit Lions. Dan Campbell is the sun and the moon of this operation. Ben Johnson, obviously, the man. I think Ben Johnson is going to be great in Detroit. I think he was great in Detroit. I think he's going to be great in Chicago. But this is about Dan Campbell. Like, sometimes your initial take is the right take, and then you take this meandering little journey through a very long, perhaps too long and perhaps too content-filled offseason, and you arrive right back here in week three at the original conclusion, which was, yes, losing Ben Johnson, not ideal, but maybe, as I kind of said, like, hey, maybe Dan Campbell actually deserves a lot of credit here for the way this offense is built, the way that it feels, you know, because he is a guy with an offensive background. He's not just some dumb meathead. He's a guy that when he took over the play calling duties part way through 2021, before they officially passed things over to Ben Johnson, they were doing all the fun, the motion, the play action, all that stuff. He was the one who started to turn this offense into what it is now. And again, Johnny Morton's obviously doing a great job there. A lot of new coaches are doing a great job, but this comes back to Dan Campbell, and this comes back to what this team is. They were awesome in this game. And you know, sometimes football, we make it complicated, but the better team tonight, the team that won the game, was the team that didn't make crushing mistakes. They were better in the red zone, and they were better on third down. Like, it's so simple, but that was what it was. Rushing success rate in this game, just to compare between the two teams. And look, obviously, they had the explosive plays, did the Detroit Lions, but 57.9 rushing success rate for the Detroit Lions in this game. Third best among teams in week three. The Baltimore Ravens, 25th at 36.8. And, you know, it felt like that. Like, Derrick Henry had his moments, obviously, but this Lions run game David Montgomery pops the big plays in this one, but they were just moving the ball, like getting positive down and distance in the run game. And obviously, again, having no Madubuike in this game, that's a big part of it. You could run right up the gut there. They had some really nice moments there. And Jared Goff, not a crazy fantasy performance. So, you know, talking about maybe his history in those outdoor road games like Justin Boone had over the last, you know, week. Speaking of Boone, you're going to hear another very funny tight end primetime game that hadn't happened yet moment later on in the podcast. So make sure you stay. He's on a roll with this, by the way. So Thursday Night Football, Trey McBride, we'll see what he says about that. But he's on a roll. You'll hear it when you get to it. But Jared Goff, not a big fantasy stat line in this game, but made the throws that he needed to make. The touchdown, the placement to Amon-Ra St. Brown after the double move was just perfect. I mean, he puts the ball right where it needed to be. It was a great double move by St. Brown. It's just, I actually really liked the note that Aikman, I believe, kept sharing on the broadcast that Jared Goff said that Amon-Ra St. Brown is the best wide receiver he's ever thrown the football to. And, you know, Jared Goff has played with a lot of really good wide receivers, especially during his time in LA. But, man, they're one of my favorite wide receiver quarterback connections. And I know all the football hipsters love the quarterbacks who, you know, the ethical Hooper, whatever that is, you know, throwing it down the field, tight windows, the Geno Smiths, all those guys. But, you know, when you're just like mind-numbingly efficient like Jared Goff is, and you've got a wide receiver who's just perfect for that style of football, you get what has been one of the most consistent weekly performers at this position over the last few years. And their game just seamlessly overlaps. Obviously, Cooper Kupp, who Jared Goff used to play with, had a better season, like a better peak season, a true nuclear season than Amon-Ra St. Brown has. But obviously that came after Jared Goff left, which I don't think is like a Jared Goff thing. I think Cooper Kupp truly, in my opinion, based on his reception perception tracking, took his game to another level after it just that was like a coincidence. I don't think it like had to do, and they ran the offense differently with Matthew Stafford than they did with Jared Goff. I'm off track here, but you know, St. Brown, to his credit, has gotten better and better every single season, which is another reason I'm such a big fan of him as a player. And again, just Mr. Consistent, and he's at a point now where his best play with Jared Goff is better than what Cooper Kupp was with Jared Goff. And you know, if you've followed my work the last few years, you know, when he came into league, Amon-Ra St. Brown, I kind of jokingly said he was like Bud Light Cooper Kupp. He's so far past that at this point. You know, he's just that guy. Like he's maybe like Bud Heavy Cooper Kupp, not even Bud Heavy. He's like full on IPA, you know, double IPA, high ABV Cooper Kupp. Like I don't know. The analogy there is stupid, but you get my point here. So really, we didn't learn anything new from the Lions in terms of like start this guy, start that guy. It's just the offense is a much better environment than we thought. David Montgomery, I think, you know, interesting coming off this performance, right? Because he does have those big plays, which is I'm not saying he's not an explosive runner, but typically you'd think Jahmyr Gibbs rips off the big plays, and like Jahmyr Gibbs touched the football 27 times in this game to 13 for David Montgomery, which of course, when you're ripping off the big plays, you're not necessarily going to get a bunch of opportunities to touch the football. So that's kind of part of this here, maybe skewing those numbers, but it certainly looks like Jahmyr Gibbs is like farther ahead of David Montgomery generally than he has been in past seasons. But Montgomery's still a guy that if this offense is going to operate at the level that it did tonight, and I thought the interior of the offensive line played great. That was one thing, like, coming out of week one, you know, was definitely kind of like raising an eyebrow at some of the play designs and the lack of motion and the lack of play action. But, you know, you could kind of excuse that with the game script. Turns out that was the case. Plus, they obviously just played a great Packers defense. But the thing I was probably most concerned about coming out of that week one was the performance of Tate Ratledge and Christian Mahogany and some of those guys on the interior. Man, those guys gotten better every single week, and they were great tonight, just moving the pile, blasting open those big holes. I don't know if that's going to happen for Dave Montgomery on a weekly basis, but he is certainly a guy that is still on that flex radar and remains, even if you're not starting him. I've got like one Dave Montgomery team, and you know, he's not a guy who's generally made the lineup because, you know, there's Bucky Irving, there's Alvin Kamara. I probably should have started Dave. It doesn't matter. Shout out to me. But still, like, you know, I've been playing Alvin Kamara. I've been playing Travis Etienne. Like, David Montgomery's going to be a tough guy. Like, do you start him after this type of performance? I don't know. It's going to feel tough to leave him on the bench after, at least in the league, I've got him in 29 points, but he's still like a difficult player to project for me, but he remains one of the best bench holds, even if you are not starting him. Let's go over to the Ravens here. Like I said, before the fourth quarter, I thought the Ravens were having a really nice night. I thought good performance overall from them offensively, but just something is weird with this Ravens team. When they get against good teams, you know, it's just like they, like I said, they're just a touch too sloppy and they're just a touch too tight. Specifically on the sloppiness angle, Derrick Henry, for the second time in 3 weeks, he's the only running back in the NFL that's fumbled in each of the first three games. But for the second time in 3 weeks, it is a devastating, I think, tide-turning fumble in the fourth quarter for, I mean, a guy that I just freaking love to watch play and one of the best running backs legitimately to ever play the game of football. That's just weird. That's just bizarre. He only ends up touching the ball 13 times in this game. And, you know, some of the, like, he, that could have been a bigger thing for him in the fourth quarter, but three fumbles on 43 touches so far. You hope that that's just an outlier. You know, they're not going to bench Derrick Henry for Keaton Mitchell or something like that, but just a weird, bizarre thing. And it's just kind of this whole deal with this, the Ravens team that I'm sort of making here, like this point about how they play like a little too sloppy, a little too tight. I want to talk about the tightness part of this too. Man, John Harbaugh's decision to punt the football late in the fourth quarter was just mind-numbing to me. Like, it was pretty indefensible. Fourth and nine on the Baltimore 32, you know, Ben Baldwin's bot, which is on Twitter. So that is a strong go for it. And to me, like, you know, people always say, like, the analytics can't take this into account, whatever. What you should definitely take into account in this moment, if you're a human being like John Harbaugh, is that if you know that if you don't go for this on the other side, if Dan Campbell gets a chance to go for it, he's going for that thing. And sure enough, that is exactly what happened. Fourth down on the other side of the 2 minute warning after the Lions get the ball back because you punted the ball away to them. They run a fourth down pass play where the defense just bites on the play action. Amon-Ra St. Brown in one-on-one coverage. Goff again rips a beautiful throw to his number one wide receiver. Fourth down, boom, and then obviously David Montgomery goes on to score his second touchdown of the night. Game over. I just think there's too many moments like that with this Ravens staff. This is not a fantasy takeaway. This is more of like a football rant here, but I don't know. Just tough. Like, you just felt like that was what was going to happen, and it is what happened. From a fantasy standpoint, you know, Lamar obviously comes out here with a great game. Three touchdowns, over 300 total yards, 35 on the ground. I did think he didn't play well in the fourth quarter here. Again, nobody cares about this, like, from a fantasy standpoint, but he's like dropping. He was dropping like way too deep past the tackles to the point that then when he's trying to step up through pressure there, he's running himself right into interior pressure. It wasn't the best Lamar night, in my opinion, late in that game. Elsewhere in the passing game, we got to talk about a few things here. One, let me just get my obligatory Rashad Bateman, you know, love out of the way. Awesome game from Bateman. They should probably think about throwing him the football more. I say that all the time. Seven targets, six catches, 63 yards, really good zone coverage reps, couple man coverage wins. The Ravens, weirdly, right now are kind of like rotating their wide receivers. I'm not 100% sure if the stats I'm looking at right now are fully updated, but it goes Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, and then Mark Andrews down to Tylan Wallace, Justice Hill, Charlie Kolar, then like DeAndre Hopkins. But none of these guys ran around on more than 80% of the dropbacks. Bateman was second on the team at 63%. Again, if the numbers I'm looking at right now are accurate, like fully updated here. But you could see that there were times where, like, we're running one of those deep drop plays from Lamar Jackson, and it's like a max protect with a two-man route, and it's Tylan Wallace and this version of DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know if we need to be doing that. I do think this receiver room is deep, but I'm not so sure that, like, we need DeAndre Hopkins and Tylan Wallace. Hopkins has made his plays this year, and so has Tylan Wallace, quite frankly. Actually, I misspoke. It was actually Tylan Wallace and Devontae Walker. And again, Walker's had a couple of nice receptions this year, but what are we talking about here? So it's just like taking a little bit of opportunities away from the top two guys, which is Flowers, who's had a great season this year, slow game here, and Rashad Bateman, a guy that you've paid. That seems a little bit weird to me from the Ravens' perspective. But Zay Flowers definitely takes a step back. 2 catches for 13 yards. Unfortunately, like when picking between JSN and Zay Flowers, like the two receivers who I think have made a real leap here in their third seasons and were, as I said all last week, like up in the Puka quadrant in terms of wide receiver efficiency, you felt like there was probably more of a step back from Flowers because there are more guys in this offense that can emerge here. Like I said, Bateman's not going to go under 20 yards every game. He has a nice game here, and Mark Andrews pops back up for a monster performance. 6 of 6 targets, 91 yards, 2 catches for a touch for touchdowns here. Look, I was definitely concerned at the first 2 weeks and thought like, yeah, Andrews is a guy you can probably almost drop in fantasy football. Like Isaiah Likely's coming back soon. Was wrong about that. He was lined up in man coverage on multiple occasions and made big plays against this Detroit Lions defense. So really impressive night from Mark Andrews. And, you know, I would be kind of silly to think I could confidently project what next week is going to look like as we go to definitely a tight butt game there between the Ravens and the Chiefs, two teams that desperately are going to want to beat the other. I have no idea what Andrews is going to produce in that game, especially if Likely is back. But this was encouraging if you were still trying to hang on to him as a tight end one. You kind of needed a performance like this, like one last gasp here. So he avoids what would have been like a coping corner performance if he had another slow night. So this was a big game. A lot more, honestly, that we could talk through from this game. But I think we hit all the important notes here. Just really, just really disappointed in the Ravens in this one. But we are going to toss to the rest of the show here with Justin Boone and the People's Panic Meter. Let's get into all that right now. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that is Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, buddy?
What's happening, dude? I really think that this is the week that we can finally actually panic about some of these things, right? We've flirted with like coping corner a little bit the last 2 weeks, but once you get 3 weeks of data, now you can't go back on the, well, it was one bad matchup. You can't fall back on some of those excuses. Like now we actually know there are guys to panic about. So I'm super pumped to do the show.
Yeah, I know. I was looking through the outline and I was like, ooh, got a lot of total panics. We've got some coping corner, at least mentions. We'll see if somebody actually goes into the coping corner. But yeah, I don't know about you, though. It's like sometimes I think we get way too, I always reference Sigmund Bloom says this all the time, that sometimes you can be right and wrong about a player over the course of one season. So I guarantee like we're going to jump the shark here. We're going to go a little too far with some of the panic in this particular episode. And then like 4 weeks from now, that's going to look stupid. So like, that's just football, man. It's a constant moving target.
Well, and it's been good though, because I think you had one that you wanted to go coping corner with, and I talked you off the ledge a little bit. Then last week, I think it was the opposite. So we'll see. There might be a couple here where we're both headed in the same direction and we're both panicking, but we'll figure it out.
All right. So let's get into it here. Reminder structure of this show. First segment, we've got the panic meter. Second segment, panic meter. Third segment, panic meter. Fourth segment, we do have Justin Boone's waiver wire picks. And we've got some really interesting ones to talk through there. So we're going to save a good bit of time for those waiver wire selections. But let's waste no more time here. It is time to fire up the post week 3 People's Panic Meter.
Would you say it's time for everyone to panic?
Yes, I would, Kent.
Oh, my God. Okay, it's happening.
No.
Panic Meter is presented by Dentech, protecting your teeth from fantasy stress one matchup at a time. Again, the designations for the People's Panic Meter. We have no panic, some panic, total panic, and then the dreaded coping corner. And like I said, I think we might get some coping corner mentions here. Before we get into the submissions, I just want to shout out to everyone that sends in the submissions. We got a ton this week, many of which were concentrated around the same players. So if we don't read off your name, just know you were heard, you were listened to. We acknowledge you out there. But we got a lot of Bengals, we got a lot of Jags, we got a lot of Drake London. We're gonna cover all of those players here, starting with the first submission. And shout out to Colby, who sends in this video on Chase Brown.
What's going on, guys? A lot of my teams to start the year are 1-2, and they're led in the backfield by Chase Brown. And I'm very concerned by Chase Brown. He had a terrible week 3. He's getting hit behind the line a ton, and I don't know what to do with him. He's like my only star RB. Am I going in the coping corner for this?
Colby, buddy, we appreciate the hell out of you for sending in the video. And we always love the videos, by the way, especially if you just really let it rip. We love it. But Chase Brown, Justin Boone, we were excited about Chase Brown heading into this season. What is the current panic level on Chase Brown after a 10 carry, 3 yard, 0.3 yards per carry game on Sunday?
I mean, it's got to be total panic. In my mind, it has to be total panic. I'm not willing to go coping corner. I'm beyond some panic at this point, but there is context to it, right? And I'm not going to sit here and try to, make a strong case for Brown or anything like that. But going into the season, we thought his situation was going to be a lot different, right? It's a good player, but a lot of players' fantasy outlooks are dependent on their situation, and his has changed massively in the first few weeks. And it's just that Joe Burrow injury. And now this offense is completely different than what we expected. And we talked about Jake Browning over the course of last week. I think we both think he's a competent backup. But we also talked about how hard the schedule was going to be for the first month. Mm-hmm. He had to go against the Vikings last week. We saw how that worked out. He's got the Broncos, the Lions, the Packers. Those are the next three coming up here. I don't think they're going to be able to move the ball very well against those teams, especially on the ground. So, yeah, you have to be very, very worried about Chase Brown. There is a caveat if we're going to look at the schedule, because eventually it does get a little easier. And Jake Browning, I think, will be able to move the ball like he did a couple years ago when he took over for Burrow. But, man, it's not very exciting right now when you're thinking about having Chase Brown on your team. And the fact that you're 1-2, like, that is actually lucky, despite the fact you took Chase Brown as high as you probably did.
I hate to say this to Colby and everybody else who sent in Chase Brown submissions, and I hate to say this to you, Justin Boone, but I kind of want to make a coping corner case here for Chase Brown.
Wow. Okay.
We're not let's not put it on the meter just yet. We're not going to say this for
<Too
sure. late. laughs> I mean, it's already on the screen, but like you mentioned the situation, and I think Chase Brown is a nice player. But he's not, Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley. He's not one of the best running backs in the league. I think we could probably sit here and name off like 15, maybe 20 running backs in the NFL that are better than Chase Brown. Maybe 20 is pushing it, but I don't think he is. I think he might be slightly above replacement level sort of starting running back play. So really the bull case for Chase Brown was mostly around the fact that you were going to get elite workload in an elite offense. Well, the offense is not going to be elite without Joe Burrow, period, end of story. I'm not sure that the situation was going to be elite to begin with, because they were 31st in yards before contact on their running back runs. So it already wasn't shaping up to be like the situation that you might have wanted. And then this past week, obviously it was a weird game script. Maybe that has something to do with this. They got blown out by the Minnesota Vikings. By the way, I think they might get blown out here and there every now and again this season. But Chase Brown only had a 60.9% share of the running back touches. And you just kind of wonder if the coaching staff is starting to think like, you know what, let's just throw something else out there and see what sticks. Because what they have been doing with Chase Brown has not been working. So if he is like a 60% touch player, or 65, shoot, I think even 70% touch player on this offense, I kind of think like there's just no shot he's going to return anything close to top 12 running back performance, which is what he was drafted to be. And he's going to be a guy that goes from set it and forget it, like that's what you were thinking you drafted, to a guy that every week you're kind of wondering if you throw him out in your flex, and there's really no path to like what like the coping corner. Like, Boone, this is your first year doing this, so just let me remind right. you what the coping corner means here. The coping
you can't
corner
come
basically
back from
means
it is what I've heard. Yeah,
You can come back from it. You can be pulled back from the coping corner if things dramatically change, and it's a group decision. This is a democracy here. But the coping corner basically means, like, we don't take submissions about the player anymore because, like, it just is what it is. You're not going to get what you thought here out of this player. And I kind of feel like Chase Brown's the perfect, like, example of that right now. Like, tell me how this changes for the rest of the fantasy season.
Well, I will say the argument against the volume would be that, and I didn't see an update on it today, but Samaje Perine did get hurt in that game. So I don't know who else is really coming for his touches. But if Samaje Perine misses any time, I don't think you're going to put Taj Brooks out there a significant amount, the rookie. So he would maybe go back to getting more work. And then the only other thing I could say is just when the schedule gets easier, Jake Browning returning to like some level of play like he had a couple years ago when the offense was like passable down the stretch. And from week 7 on, it's the Steelers, the Jets, the Bears, and the Steelers again. He also gets the Patriots at one point later in the season. He gets the Dolphins in the fantasy playoffs. So I can see some games here where he does pop back up into like that fantasy RB2 top 20 kind of mix. You're never going to feel super confident about it. I think right now, like rest of season, I haven't done my trade value chart update yet, but rest of season, he's going to fall all the way down to like that RB25 range, like that high end RB3 range. Like that's where he is now, especially knowing that I'm expecting over the next 3 weeks, kind of what we just saw this weekend, where that offense is going to have a very hard time moving the ball. So yeah, that I'm willing to go total panic. I'm not quite on the coping corner yet, but we're on that borderline and you make a pretty good case for it.
Okay, well, it has to be a group decision. So we're not going to go coping corner. Although everything you just said about your update for him in your trade value chart, that sounds an awful lot like a coping corner guy to me. I'm just going to say that. But the only reason I'm willing to, I'll stand down here is that I do think that I kind of want to give players like a 1 week pass after playing the Vikings defense. Like that's just like, I think this Bengals offense can maybe be more passable than it was last week. But yes, truly, this is a 1 week pass. I'm going to say this. I just said it's a democracy. It has to be a group decision, but this is a 1 week pass on the Chase Brown stuff. We get another week like that, I'm going to overrule you. I'm going to full coup this thing and we're throwing him into the coping corner next week.
Think about what we said about this team last year, right? Or last week. And it was that Ja'Marr Chase is probably going to be okay over the long term. He's going to get a lot of volume. I know the game this week wasn't great, but the Ja'Marr Chase still going to be a decent fantasy starter for you. T. Higgins, we are super concerned about, and I think that played out exactly as we expected to. And Chase Brown was like somewhere in the middle on this one. And I think after these like few bad matchups, there might actually be like a weird window where I might try to buy back in on Chase, on Ja'Marr Chase, and on Chase Brown. Because I think at that point, if he has another bad game or two, people are going to be just, you know, running through the streets, screaming, so angry about what he's doing based on where they took him. And yet, because of that schedule, I think there might be a little bit of value if you can get him very, very cheap in a few weeks. So we'll come back to that. You know, when we get to like, you know, week 5, maybe we'll discuss where he's at and whether he is a buy low in some way, because the ceiling is not RB1 anymore. I'm just saying if he falls down to the RB3 range, are we getting value on a guy who could be an RB2 during some of those games in the second half of the season or when the schedule eases up? And I do think he could be.
Okay, let's get to the next one here because you just mentioned it. It's about Ja'Marr Chase. Zach sends in an email, and again, he was not the only one, titled Bengals Turned Kitties. We got a lot of cat puns coming up here, so buckle in for that one. I am panicking around Ja'Marr Chase after his disappointing production this week against Minnesota. He was a consensus top 3 pick, and he was expected to be quarterback proof. Is it worth shopping him around for another top tier wide receiver if we can find someone else willing to take him based on name value? Yeah, this is where I kind of want to say it was the Vikings defense. Let's not forget that Ja'Marr Chase did actually show himself to be quarterback proof the week before against Jacksonville. Like, I think people are forgetting that Jake Browning played the vast majority of that game when Ja'Marr Chase was excellent against Jacksonville. So this is one where I'm not willing to go coping corner on Ja'Marr Chase. What is your level of panic around the Bengals' number one wide receiver?
I'm still only some panic on him. And like you said, we saw it 2 weeks ago. And then this week, it was a tough matchup. And I am going to put a lot of stock in that. So not really panicking, but we are adjusting. It's just he's not the elite player that you drafted him to be anymore. You have to realize that those expectations are out the window. And now we're viewing him as a mid-range, but probably more of like a low-end wide receiver one, I would say. And it's a lot more volume-based than it used to be. And yet still, because we know what Chase can do, and he's the kind of player that can get the ball anywhere on the field and turn it down for a home run, like, he'll still come through more often than not, I think. Just that elite, elite ceiling is totally out of the picture. So you take that into account, I guess. But for me, it's still just some panic, because I think he's going to be a guy that you're going to be fine throwing in your lineup the rest of the way. And you just have to hope now that the rest of your lineup can pick up the slack.
Right. Like, it's coping corner for like Ja'Marr Chase going to be worth the number one overall pick. Like, but we're right now, we're not living in that world anymore. We're living in a world where, like we said, the expectation is low end wide receiver one. He's going to have weeks. Oh my God. What, using him like he's Tavon Austin. Oh my God. The tweets from this
love the Tavon Austin reference. That's great.
Okay. Come back from that. Come back from that.
Reset. Reset. Okay. Yeah. We're okay.
Reset. 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 We're okay. Anyways. We're readjusting our expectations to who Ja'Marr Chase is, and like, you're gonna have weeks like you got against Minnesota, especially because it's Minnesota. I mean, shoot, that one of the wide receivers we're gonna talk about later had a dud week against the Minnesota Vikings. It just is what it is. The Bears looked the worst they have all season against this Vikings defense. So I want to give it a week here with Ja'Marr Chase before I really start panicking about him, because I do think that there's a scenario where he can be totally just like a solid low-end wide receiver one. And I would say, too, like, this idea that you're going to shop him based on name value. Everybody else can see the game logs, and everybody else knows the quarterback's not out there. Like, unless there's some complete bozo like Patrick Starr living under a rock in your fantasy football league, then, like, you're not trading Ja'Marr Chase for somebody that isn't a similar – like, another top-tier wide receiver, I guess. That would be my opinion on that.
Remember when I asked you, I don't know when it was, a couple weeks ago, about like who's going to be the Wandale Robinson PPR scam of this year?
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Yeah.
We all thought it was going to be Josh Downs. Like, targets. No, actually, it's Ja'Marr Chase. If you want to be serious, it's actually probably Chris Olave in New Orleans. But that's a good one. 10 catches for 54 yards. That's the Wandale special there from my guy Chris Olave. Okay, let's continue with this weird cat theme we've got going on here. David sends in an email titled "Profiles in Panic." Parentheses, here, kitty, kitty edition. I can't believe I just said that. Absolute and total panic in the Meow Mix multiverse. That's pretty good, David. Panthera Tigris, Chase Brown, and Panthera Onesa. What am I talking about? Travis Hunter are coughing up hairballs. Jacksonville. Right. BTJ Will might get right soon, but Lawrence has more rapport, trust in Strange and Walker Poshington. I'm not drunk, like this is what this email says, if you're listening to this on the audio. Then Travis, snaps on defense are like watching a kitten chase a laser pointer. Seems like a fun idea, but it's just a waste of time. Okay, let's do a panic level for Brian Thomas Jr. and a panic level for Travis Hunter, because I think these are two different situations. Let's start with Brian Thomas Jr. What is your level of panic on the Jacksonville Jaguars number one receiver?
I know that the production hasn't been like wide receiver one-esque for fantasy here, but we're still talking about a guy that has a really big ceiling. He's shown it to us before last year. He's 15th in targets amongst all wide receivers right now. I know he hasn't found the end zone yet, but 49 yards in week two. You didn't think I was going this way with it, did you? 55 yards this past week. If he gets a touchdown in one of those games, I think everybody's looking at this totally differently. So the usage is there. He's a full-time player in this offense. I still think the production is going to come the same way I made the argument for AJ Brown last week. Like, they will get him there because he's the kind of player that he is. They need to. The volume is going to be there. I still think he's going to be fine. I am just some panic on BTJ. I know everyone else, I think, is further than me on this one, but I am just some panic. I think he's going to be fine.
I actually was really conflicted on this one, whether it's some panic or total panic. And the reason I was a little bit more like I'm edging towards total panic, but I think you're right to keep it in some panic. The reason I think I'm really bothered by this is because we have multiple things that are wrong here. Our Our producer Jason Jung sent me a really good tweet from Kyle from the Fantasy Footballers, who used to do some work with him. Shout out to Kyle. Since 2000, Brian Thomas Jr.'s 28% catch rate is the lowest of any wide receiver to see 25 plus targets through 3 weeks. For those counting, it ranks 522nd out of 522 wide receivers in this span. That is obviously horrific. Obviously, that is unsustainable. And that maybe gives me some pause here that, like, if we, like, we could get his catch rate back to a normal level if, like, one of the three things that I think, because look, you don't have a 28% catch rate and it's just like one problem. Okay. That's what's driving me a little bit nuts on social media right now, is everybody's trying to make it like, oh, this is actually just Trevor Lawrence's fault. Guys, he's at 28% catch rate. It's not just the quarterback's fault. If you're watching the games for even, like, you don't even have to watch the games. You just watch, like, all of his targets, and you know it's not just Trevor Lawrence's fault. But Trevor Lawrence is playing poorly because he's playing like Trevor Lawrence. He's stuck on the first read. He's not consistently accurate. That just is what it is. I don't know if that's going to change, but maybe it does at some point. He gets more comfortable in the offense. I don't know. The other part of it is that Brian Thomas Jr. is also playing poorly. He's dropping passes, he's leaving plays on the field, and he's having issues going over the middle and, like, consistently settling against zone coverage, which is, by the way, issues he had as a rookie. A third part of this is just the offense feels a little disjointed right now. You know, they are getting the role players involved. The run game looks pretty good, but still, like, they have a bunch of, they're getting banged on illegal shifts left and right, called, uncalled. Guys don't quite know where to line up all the time. But I still think Liam Cohen's doing generally a pretty good job, but they're still trying to figure this whole offensive thing out. So if just, like, two of the three things, like BTJ suddenly, like, the light turns on, the offense suddenly starts to kind of coalesce and look pretty good, like, we can get this back to a normal level, even if he might go down as a small loss in fantasy this year, just because we are now combating against three variables there. And I don't think just one of them getting right is enough. I think, like, two of the three, if not three of the three, have got to get right for this to not be a panic situation.
Yeah, and I think that's all great points. And I think the one that I feel ties into what I said is the idea of the offense feeling disjointed, and that when mm-hmm. it starts getting going a little bit better, I think that's going to mean good things for him, because the last 2 weeks we've seen him produce a little bit. This isn't a scenario where he's putting up, you know, 10, 20 yards a week. He's starting to produce. Things are going to get better. I think he's going to be fine. I think the spot for total panic is the other guy in that receiving core. Yeah, I mean, Travis Hunter just, you know, seemed like an incredible talent. We knew the athleticism that he was going to have coming in. It's such a great story. Such a fun player, too, right? I made the argument before the season that this was just the kind of guy you wanted on your fantasy team because he was going to be fun to watch. He has not been fun to watch. There has been nothing about him that has been fun to watch. And I'm going total panic here, because for the second overall pick, like, in redraft leagues, you can't put him in your lineup. You're not going to be able to trade him for anything of value. And I say that as someone who last week tried to trade him on a lot of redraft rosters and nobody was buying. Nobody wanted to give me anything of value. I tried to put him in packages, nothing. People saw his name and immediately rejected every trade and told me that when I asked them about it. So you can't trade him. You're not going to drop him, I don't think, at this point, because there is a chance he could turn it around. In Dynasty, there's time, right? He's got time. They'll figure it out. I'm holding them in Dynasty. But in Redraft, it's total panic. And it's like borderline coping corner, I think, because he's not getting the volume. He's not looking good. Like, he looks like a day three rookie out there that doesn't really know what he's doing yet. The other guys in the offense are eating into his workload. You want to make a case that, like, okay, Dyami Brown, he got hurt in this game. He might miss some time. I don't think that really helps Hunter. I think that helps Parker Washington or Walker Poshington or whatever the email said. I think it helps Brenton Strange. I don't think it's going to help Hunter. He looks better on defense right now. And I think you could make a case for, let's let him go play there, even though fantasy-wise that would be terrible. I want him to have the best possible career. And right now on offense, he's only contributing to the dysfunction in that offense. He is not the solving problem. And he has, like, what? Like, I thought there'd be at least some flashes, some big plays. I think he has one highlight where he, like, spun out of a tackle and got some extra yards. That's it. There's no plays downfield. There is nothing exciting here. I feel like I'm talking myself towards coping corner, but I'm going to sit at total panic because there's a chance as this offense gets better, which I expect it to, that he will come around. And yet I don't have anywhere near the faith or confidence in him doing that as I do with BTJ.
Yeah. I agree with you about the dynasty thing. Like, he's a hold in dynasty, somebody that, like, I wouldn't be freaked if I took. Look, sometimes these rookies take a minute, okay? Like, you look like a complete idiot if you took Roma Dunze earlier in your dynasty draft last year, and now you don't look like such an idiot. Like, sometimes it's okay. It's called dynasty. It's not called redraft. So it's fine if you took him rather high. And also, the thing that worries me, or one thing I disagree with you, though, is that, like, I think he, when he's gotten the opportunity to run downfield routes, which is obviously very limited, I still think he looks like a guy that actually has a good feel for NFL zone coverage. And I kind of want him to do more of that stuff. The problem is,
there's
though,
been
that
no production
not,
in that area. Like, he's not connecting on any of those. Yeah.
I completely agree with you. And that's why I'm with you from a fantasy standpoint. I am also at total panic too. And I have one Travis Hunter redraft team, and the rest of the team is really good. I'm like, oh my God, this is going to sink me. Like, this one spot, cause it's like a start like multi wide receiver league. I'm like, thank God Jordan Addison is back this week, cause I can just take Travis Hunter out and put Jordan Addison in there. And hopefully Carson Wentz, like I'm talking about Carson Wentz. Like, hopefully he saves me here. What a brutal break. But for Travis Hunter, the thing is, like, he was a great wide receiver prospect. The thing is, though, he's not focusing on just wide receiver. You know, he's focusing on being a two-way player. And as long as he's focusing on being a two-way player, like, I think the idea, what we heard all offseason, was he was going to be like an 80% offensive player, and then he was going to go, you know, and like sprinkle in on defense. That's like not what's happening now. We just showed the stats on the screen. He's like playing over 60% of his snaps on defense now at this point, or 60% of the team defensive snaps. It went up in week 3. So right now, yeah, you can't play him. He's definitely a total panic. And like, we'll see when he does develop and hopefully understands more of like what he needs to do on offense. Cause it is look very, very just like the operational part of it. Like, where somebody's always telling him where to line up, you know, the motions and the shifts. It's been rocky at this point. I just don't know that right now, like, his rookie season is trending towards like kind of a wash. And that is a shame, because he's a very talented player who was a good receiver prospect. But I think so far, like, grading how this has gone for Jacksonville in terms of the experiment of him being a two-way player, I don't think it's gone very well. And I think I'm kind of like, do they just need to stick him at corner or stick him at receiver and kind of like let him go at one of the two spots? I kind of think that, and that's a shame, because I felt more confident about it in the offseason, and so far I've been wrong on that.
Yeah, and there's some guys, especially with the rookies, where we might not see the production yet, but you're seeing some of those underlying metrics point in the right direction. With Hunter, nothing is pointing in the right direction, right? You talk about the usage head the wrong way, the snaps, the catches, the targets, everything has declined over these first three games. And yes, some of that might be because he's starting to play a little more on defense, but even the first game, it wasn't great. He had 33 yards in the first game, and we've somehow gone down from there. Like, it seems wild that you could take a player this high and not get more out of him early in the season. But it is just the first three games, and I want to believe that he's going to come around eventually. And we know, we even saw it this week in week 3 with some of the rookies, where that light like switches on in their head and they start to feel more comfortable and they start to look a little more like the player they were in college. I hope it happens soon for him, but I just don't have a lot of confidence that it's going to in this offense.
No, and look, let's also be real too. This is a unique and unprecedented situation. Nobody's ever tried to do this in the NFL. So, like, we probably do need to give it more than 3 games to decide whether it's a failure or, yeah, he should just be a corner. He looks great at corner, by the way. That's the other problem here is, like, he looks great as a cornerback. The Jaguars have no incentive to just not play him at corner. So that's a complicating factor here as well. But we do need to give it more than 3 games. But I think it would be dishonest to say anything other than it's not gone very well to start. And certainly from a fantasy perspective, it's not going well. And, like, that's very obvious at this point. Okay, what else is obvious is that we had a very disappointing performance by one team in the NFC South. So Hannah sends in an email after this week titled, "What the Actual F, Falcons? Hey guys, I demand financial compensation for having to watch that Falcons game. I had to throw Michael Penix in as my quarterback due to injuries and my own poor decision making. Big yikes. Really, what I'm most panicked about, though, is Drake London. And, like, they're already benching Penix for Cousins because it didn't look any better. Am I overreacting to a terrible game? Are we inching closer and closer to the coping corner? Send help." Okay, before I throw this to Boone, just two things that I want to clear up here. One, they didn't bench Penix for Cousins. I think it was a blowout. That's why they put Penix. Or that's why they pulled Penix out. That doesn't make it any better. But I just think let's be clear about that. The other thing is, Hannah, I also played Michael Penix in my guillotine league because Jaden Daniels was out, and thank God my neck's not getting chopped for that one. But it did not make me feel good watching a Falcons performance that was absolutely terrible. Justin Boone, what's the panic level on Drake London after the Falcons got shut out by the Carolina Panthers?
All right. So it's only some panic for me, and I think people are going to think I'm so wrong about this, but sometimes like we just have weird results in the NFL, and we saw it this weekend with another game, right? The Browns beating the Packers. No one would have thought that that was going to happen, and yet that was the result. It just occurs sometimes, and I think the likelihood for like those weird games, and do you not agree, like that Falcons-Panthers game is just a weird result. Like you play that game 100 times and that happens maybe like once, right? Like it's just maybe less than once percentage wise, right? It's so crazy. But I think the chance of that happening is always higher when you're talking about divisional games. And you know, the week before it was the Vikings. We talked about that earlier. That is a very tough matchup for anyone. And again, London's another guy where he's not giving you nothing. He's giving you, you know, it was 55, 49, 55, double digit fantasy points in two of these three games. The volume has been there target-wise. He had the injury that he dealt with that because he just played through it. I think everybody just forgot about that, but he did get hurt. So it's not an ideal runout, that's for sure. But, you know, I would be shocked if he doesn't turn this thing around. And I want to see what happens against the Commanders because, you know, Washington just gave up 292 passing yards and 2 scores to Jordan Love. And then this past week, and I know a lot of it happened in garbage time, but still, Geno Smith throws for 3 touchdowns against them, almost 300 yards as well. So if Penix doesn't get it going at least a little bit against the Commanders, now we're going to have to talk about some serious panic, I think. But for Drake London, I still see the targets there. I still believe in the player and the talent. I think he is going to be fine. I just think this offense has gotten off to a really weird start because Darnell Mooney was hurt, because Drake London's been playing hurt, and now we're going to see these guys get back and healthy, and we're going to see a little closer to something like we saw at the end of last season versus what it's been so far, which is just another one of these disjointed offenses that hasn't found their rhythm yet.
I'm getting tweets like left and right about people like, when are you going to admit that you were wrong about Drake London? And I did have him ranked like 10th overall. I was very excited about Drake London this year. Like certainly it looks like my bold prediction of him being, you know, wide receiver 1 overall, like maybe triple crown contender. Yeah, that's, I'm going to be wrong about that. Like for sure.
A lot of people have gotten bold predictions wrong this year. We don't need to talk about that.
We specifically read off the rules about bold predictions. If you're even in the neighborhood of getting them right, you get to take the victory lap. If you're wrong, bold prediction, doesn't matter. But that's definitely going to be wrong. That's definitely not happening. But here's the thing. Like in terms of being wrong about him being like the 10th overall player, it's going to take more than 3 weeks for me to admit that I'm wrong about that. Is it trending towards me being wrong? Yes. Let's kind of walk through the process here. The guy is top 10 in targets in the NFL right now. He's got 27 targets through 3 games. That's what we kind of expected. But he's also 39th in receiving yards through 3 weeks. Typically, one of those things changes. He's not going to get targeted any less. Like typically the receiving yardage is going to come meet the targets. Like, so I think that there's only room to grow here. And I like your point about like, yeah, he's averaging 53 yards per game, despite picking up that shoulder injury and playing the Vikings in week 2. It's not as if he's just been out there giving you 0 spots. I get it though. He's not been worth like even what, like certainly what I said and not where he went in draft. So I am also at some panic. And the reason I walked up to some panic is after week 1, it was like, why are people complaining about Drake London? He had all those targets and like that's going to normalize going forward. Week 2, I'm not panicking after week 2. He played against the Vikings defense while being injured and the team just decided to run the hell out of the ball. That's fine. The reason I got to jump up to some panic now is that I thought that was a very, very disturbing performance by Michael Penix. And like watching that game back, not like the Panthers did anything super crazy, exotic on defense. The Panthers don't have a good defense. I just think Michael Penix played poorly, like didn't rip throws over to the middle of the field. You know, wasn't accurate when he tried to push it outside the numbers. that has to get better. So I'm at least at some panic now, because if I'm going to be wrong about Drake London, it's going to be because Michael Penix did not work out. And that week three performance gives me at least a little bit of pause here.
Yep. I think that's a very good point. I think, you know, this is one hill that I feel like I'm willing to die on for at least a few more weeks. Hopefully he'll turn it around by then. But yeah, with the targets being there, I think he'll be fine, man. I think we got to give this one a little longer. He'll get further removed from the injury and he'll turn it around.
I agree with you there. Okay, next one coming in here is from Joe M. I'm happy to get this get the points this week, but I'm still worried about Nico Collins. Watching this offense is bad for my health. The line is Swiss cheese. CJ Stroud never has time, and when he does, he doesn't look good. I actually would kind of challenge you to show me the plays where he has a clean pocket and he doesn't look good, because I don't really know that clean pocket ever exists, but that's a subject for another day. I do actually think CJ Stroud's starting to pick up some bad habits, so I'm only being kind of joking there, Joe. This week's touchdown was a broken coverage by a bad defense. That I'm also not totally sure if the Jags have a bad defense. Last week's touchdown was a low percentage sideline catch. They struggle to get him even the most basic layup targets, and now he might lose even more of that with Christian Kirk. Anyways, yada yada. Is he just going to become a wide receiver one finished by the skin of his teeth while scoring 10 points? Doesn't seem sustainable. I think he's a sell high. Thoughts? Where are we at with the Nico Collins panic after 100 yards and a touchdown in week three?
Isn't it no panic? Like, I don't even know why this question is in here. I don't even know what this person's really talking about. Like, you had Christian Kirk come back this week and Nico Collins has a great game. Like, am I just like so in love with Nico Collins here that I'm missing something, Harmon? Like, what is this one all about? He's fine. He's ramping up. The production was there this week. Yeah, the offense doesn't look as good as maybe we thought it was going to, but I think he's going to be okay. I don't think this is a sell high by any means.
No, I don't think so either. I'm at no panic on Nico Collins. Look, last year, the offense was terrible. The offensive line was atrocious, and Nico Collins was a wide receiver one in fantasy football. Like, so far, the offensive line has been atrocious. The offense looks terrible, and Nico Collins is showing you the last 2 weeks why he is a wide receiver one in fantasy football. Because, like, it only you want the guy that it only takes a couple of plays to make it happen, you know? And, like, that's what Nico Collins is and has been. So I'm not concerned about Nico. Like, again, is he going to be a small loss as a first round pick? Maybe, because if this offensive line is this bad and like they can't get anything going on offense, maybe. And like, I am looking at the matchups. Like, we'll see about the Titans here in week four. That might be a spot where they can get going, but like, they do have Baltimore, Seattle, San Francisco, although Nick Bosa is now out for the season. So that's something to consider. The Broncos in week nine. It's not as if they've got a smooth run out here from a defensive perspective, but they have played. The Jaguars front is pretty good. Like, Josh Hines-Allen dominated that game. So we'll see. Like, I think this can get better for the Texans over the course of the year, but I have Texans panic. I don't have Nico Collins fantasy panic.
That's exactly how I feel as well. I'm not happy with where this offense is at the moment, but I'm not that worried about Nico Collins in any way. And I actually think Christian Kirk coming back could be a positive, because the other receivers in that offense haven't really been doing anything. So Christian Kirk having like that competent veteran guy might actually give defenses something else to look at other than just trying to figure out how to shut down Nico Collins, since Nick Chubb's playing okay, I guess, but they're not getting that much from the rushing attack. So defenses can just look at Nico Collins and figure out how to scheme against him all week long, where Christian Kirk, I'm kind of interested in Christian Kirk. We'll talk about him maybe when we get to the waiver wire section. Like, Christian Kirk's only like 2 years removed from being a decent fantasy player. I think he's a pretty good and underrated receiver. So it's a good thing he's back, and maybe he can help this offense look a little better as they go.
Next one we have to talk through here is from Ethan. Tricky to pick this week. A lot of backup quarterbacks this week and a lot of volatile players being volatile. Yeah, that's about how this week went. RJ Harvey's a rookie, so those caveats apply, but his snap share has been in the 30% range, and he's playing for a famously difficult to pin down play caller in Sean Payton. The usage is a toss up, and the individual play has been fine, but unremarkable. More broadly, the Bo Nix offense as of now has not really evolved, and teams have had a whole offseason to figure out the like three concepts they like to use him on. So the overall ecosystem is less solid than we were hoping for. It's a long season and we're talking about a lot of young players, but I'm raising my eyebrow at the ceiling over the course of the fantasy season. Wait for a spike week in sell. I have some panic on the Bo Nix Broncos offense right now, Boone. And I think Ethan, shout out to Ethan, completely nailed it in the analysis here. Like, this still feels like a training wheels offense. And like, we're in year two with Bo Nix. We should be ready to go. But they're still kind of like, if Sean Payton really believes in Bo Nix as much as he says he believes in Bo Nix, he doesn't show it with how he calls the plays here. So Cortland Sutton is going to be Cortland Sutton. I get that. But it's still like just not he like Nix is missing plays last week by like just an inch or two. But still, they are missed plays. And like when it's not the designery stuff, it's not looked good for Bo Nix. And this dates back to last year. You'd think that was just going to improve. It really hasn't. And again, they still call the offense. Like Broncos fans, don't shoot the messenger. They call the offense like they don't believe in Bo Nix or like they're afraid to unleash him. So from a Bo Nix standpoint and for any of these supporting players, I do have some panic here on what the Broncos have looked like through the first few weeks.
Yeah, I've told you before, like, I find Nix so interesting because I always go back to, like, my pre-draft, my prospect analysis on him. And I'll admit, like, I didn't think he was a great prospect. And then he comes out and gets attached to Sean Payton and plays pretty well as a rookie. I mean, you could still nitpick some things, but, like, overall, he outperformed, I think, what people expected from him last year. And I gave a lot of that credit to Sean Payton. Now, this season, and I think this is where, you know, this email nails it, like, you had all offseason long for defensive coordinators to figure out what to do. And I think they've figured it out. And now it's just a matter of how much do you believe in Sean Payton to actually adapt to that and figure out a way to adjust on the fly. So far, they haven't really made that counterpunch yet. And like you're saying, they're not really taking that step forward in the offense like maybe you thought they would have entered the season doing. So it's a really strange one. I'm with you, though. It's some panic for me on this offense. I do have a lot of faith that Sean Payton's going to figure something out along the way here. But then you wonder, what are Nix's limitations? And does Sean Payton know it? And he's just trying to, like, coach him up through the media and get that confidence up. We've seen other coaches do that with their quarterbacks. Overall, I'm going to give this a little bit of time. But I am incredibly disappointed so far because I thought that environment was going to continue to help Nix from a fantasy perspective. They got him more weapons. We know the line is strong. And yet so far this year, it just hasn't been there yet.
No, it has not. It has been just a rough start for the Denver Broncos. And we'll see how that continues to progress over the course of the season. But yes, definitely worried about what I've seen so far. So I've got some panic there. Final email here is from Pierce. And this is a nice galaxy brain one. I really admire this. This email is entitled Week 3 Worries. Is Rashee Rice going to get dragged down by the Chiefs offense? Rashee Rice not playing right now, by the way, and we're still panicking about him. I love this. After watching how Steve Spagnuolo schemed Malik Nabers out of the offense yesterday, do we think the KC offense is so dearth of talent that it may happen to Rashee Rice when he comes back? Sure, Mahomes is electric and found Tyquan Thornton for a couple big plays, but against a playoff caliber team, does Rashee revert to a high-level decoy rather than the target hog everyone thinks he's going to be? And are we expecting that much in terms of explosive plays or touchdowns, especially with a running game that can't get going? Folks 0-3 might be tempted to flip him for some immediate help. I actually want to hear your perspective on this idea of, like, if you're 0-3 right now and Rashee Rice is on your bench, does it actually make sense to, like, when everybody's still thinking of him in the most optimistic way, flip him to a content, like a team that's got a good record, is 3-0 right now? But before I let you go on that, I just want, let me just get this, like, real wide receiver dork level take off here. The reason that Rashee Rice is not going to get schemed out of the game like Malik Nabers was, is because Malik Nabers and Rashee Rice don't do the same thing at the position. Rashee Rice is like a big slot underneath guy that wins on these quick hitters over the middle, screens, stuff like that. How many times did you see the Giants try to throw a screen or like an underneath pass to Malik Nabers out of the slot last night against the Kansas City Chiefs? Basically never. That's also because their quarterback only wants to throw deep. Malik Nabers right now has an almost 17 air yards per target. In that game against the Chiefs, he had 20 air yards per target, which is humiliating on the coaching staff and on the quarterback that, like, you know, this guy's getting all this defensive attention. You're not doing anything to free him up. I'm a little ugh about what the Chiefs offense looks like right now from a design perspective, but I'm confident they're going to design some Mickey Mouse BS to get Rashee Rice targets underneath. So no, I'm not concerned about that part of it. The only concern for me, or like the only question mark for Rashee Rice, is he 100% healthy when he returns here? So That doesn't really have anything to do with the question, but I kind of want your opinion on this idea of that if you're 0-3 right now and you have Rashee Rice, does it actually make sense to maybe, hey, I got to get a couple wins here. Do I try to flip him now before like he does come back and he has like a 5-catch-for-40-yard game and it's not that exciting?
So I will say a lot of things to go at on this one, but I will say one thing that's going to make your offense look really bad is not having your top two receivers when you have aging tight end who's not the same player he used to be. And you're throwing to guys like Tyquan Thornton and an old Juju Smith-Schuster and Hollywood Brown, who is not a number one receiver. And that's really what's hurt this offense, I think. There are other things, but to simplify it, that is the main thing. So when you bring back Rice, when Xavier Worthy is healthy, it's going to look a lot different. So I'm not worried about Rice from a production standpoint, from a fantasy standpoint. I wouldn't be selling high because you're worried that when he comes back, he's going to be bad. But if you're 0-3, then you do have to think about trading him because you need to win now. You need to turn this thing around. You can go 0-4. You could even go 0-5. I've had teams where I've had a bunch of injuries. I've gone 0-5 and then I've turned it around and won the title. It's not easy to do, but you can do it. But yes, if you're 0-3 right now, you need to get a win. So you have to think about trading Rice for something. Package him with one of your starters and try to upgrade somewhere. I think that makes all the sense in the world. But for Rice himself, no panic at all from me either. I don't think there's any reason to be worried about him. If anything, the way this offense looks right now almost makes me more excited for him to come back because we know how much volume he can get. He's going to come in and get a ton of work. He's going to be great for fantasy when he returns, but we're still a month away from that happening. So if you're 0-3, yes, try to make the move and get better somewhere else immediately.
Love it. All right. We are going to take our first break here on the show. When we come back, we'll get to your social media submissions to the People's Panic Meter right after this. All right, we are back. We are going to run through your social media submissions to the People's Panic Meter. Justin Boone, we're going to pick up the pace on these ones too because there's some like clear-cut situations. Starting with, I think, this first one from Firm Dog. They've got some panic about Isaiah Pacheco and the Kansas City Chiefs offense. Yes, we get it. The Chiefs offense we just talked about in the previous segment, but I wanted to get this one in here, buddy, because I think Isaiah Pacheco needs to go right into the coping corner. Okay. I mean, I was telling you this on Fantasy Football Live when you're like, hey, Isaiah Pacheco's got his whole family, his friends and family there. You know, he bought a bunch of tickets. You were telling us this. I was like, so he bought a bunch of tickets for his family and friends to watch Kareem Hunt have the same amount of snaps as him and like take critical down and distance carries. And guess what happened? Isaiah Pacheco's friends and family had to watch Kareem Hunt pop in a touchdown. So, like, that's not changing. I think Pacheco is, like, completely unplayable right now.
I'm full coping corner on this one. I was going to give you credit for the Sunday morning stuff, too. You went ahead and did it yourself.
I mean, I went ahead and took it myself. What a jerk.
You thought this was finally going to be the positive game script, right? Because I made the case, like, okay, really tough run defenses the first 2 weeks, the Chargers and the Eagles. Games that they weren't going to be able to win. You thought this Giants game would be the spot where, all right, maybe we get him going. And yet it's just more of the same. Kareem Hunt gets the touchdown. The snaps aren't there for him. They're splitting. And even when you get Rashee Rice back and Worthy back and all these things I'm saying are to make this offense better, I don't think that it's going to change anything. I don't think that Pacheco all of a sudden is going to explode. It's still going to be a committee backfield. And we might even get the rookie Breshard Smith involved at that point because there's been some reports that maybe he'll start to get involved in that backfield. So, yeah, this one's a full coping corner.
Next one up here, we have Jamal McMurray sends in Marvin Harrison Jr. We're running out of excuses to use for him here. And I am with Marv on this one. Look, I can sit here and tell you, and I promise you these plays are on the film where he is just wide open over the middle of the field and Kyler Murray doesn't take those throws. Kyler Murray doesn't throw over the intermediate middle of the field. I just don't think him and Harrison are a good fit for each other. But Boone, I also can't really say that when he's dropping wide open passes. Like, if you're not going to get enough opportunities, you got to catch the GD ball when you get the opportunities. And Harrison, after last week and frankly in week two against the Panthers as well, like, if we're calling balls and strikes here, you know, that he has also been part of the problem.
Yeah, the two worst plays that I saw this week were the Harrison drop, obviously, And then we didn't even mention it with Pacheco, the play where he like ran out for the screen and turned the wrong way. Like, what are you even doing there, right? Like, both of these guys, you're not doing yourself any favors. And I'll give you credit here as well, because you brought up the fact in the summer that when everybody was talking about Harrison as a breakout candidate, you were saying that like nothing's really changed in his situation though, right? Same OC, mostly the same players. So what did we really hang our hat on? That he would come back and be this better player and kind of take over, and he hasn't. So yeah, for me, this one is total panic. I am very, very worried about Harrison. We have to completely adjust our expectations for him. And he is not even the number one receiver on that team, because Trey McBride, the tight end, is the number one receiver, and that's not changing anytime soon.
Yeah, Harrison, like, I think at some point he will have a moment, like he will have a big season in the NFL. I just don't think it's going to come in this Cardinals situation here. And again, he is part of the problem. Like, there's no getting around that. Next one up here comes from Mike Sussick. Ashton Jeanty, I'm either mad at myself for being irresponsible enough to draft him near the end of the first, or feeling like I ordered a borderline flex running back off wishful thinking I was getting an RB1. You could, like, if I had one drink, maybe one and a half drink in me, Boone, I could put Ashton Jeanty in the coping corner, but I am stone cold sober, even though I just messed that sentence up. So I think we probably settle here on total panic, but I think this Raiders situation is really bad.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's total panic, and he's not even being trusted in the passing game, right? You would hope that at least if the team's not great, if the run blocking's not great, that he gets, you know, at least thrown to when they're losing in some of these games. That's not happening. Did you see the Harditz tweet? Ian Harditz, our buddy over at Fantasy Life. He had the tweet
I don't know if I did.
I don't know if you saw it, but percentage of yards after contact for like the top running backs. Oh. And a lot of guys are like in the 60-70% range. Ashton Jeanty, 101. And that's not 101 yards after contact. That is 101% of his yards. He has 144 rushing yards on the year. He has 146 rushing yards after contact. I mean, that tells the story right there. Like, shout out to Ian for finding that. Like, it's going to be very tough for him to be more than like a grinder RB2 for fantasy. We need him to start getting some passing work, and it just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't love the way Chip Kelly's like called the offense, the way it's designed, the way it feels. It's just like, I hate to be the, like, this is why you don't take a running back sixth overall guy, but like, this is why this team maybe shouldn't have taken a running back sixth overall, because they don't have the right like environment to get the best out of him. And I definitely think from a fantasy standpoint, like, we can keep talking about the volume, but like, he's not even on pace to have Trent Richardson's rookie season. I've been getting tweets from Raiders fans that like that this is my fault for talking about the Trent Richardson thing. And I'm like, that was kind of like a joke, it was kind of a joke about like, this is how it can go wrong and still go well from a fantasy standpoint. And like, again, we're not even on pace to have that season, Boone.
Oh man. Yeah, you manifested it. I'm on board with them. This is all your fault. We're totally just blaming you for this.
That's fine. I'll take it. I'll wear it. I've done worse things before. Speaking of things that I've done poorly, let's talk about this next one here. Sean O'Meara sends in, Justin Herbo has been dealing, but kind of worried with my Ladd McConkey shares a bit. Keenan Allen and QJ stepping up makes it too many mouths to feed. Don't want to sell low, though. He will definitely have some boon weeks, but after watching three games, don't see consistent volume and a red zone target like last season. I love Ladd McConkey. Guys, there's nothing wrong with him as a player, but I do have some panic about Ladd McConkey after what we've seen so far with just the fact that QJ and Keenan, like you said, there's no reason to take targets away from those guys.
Yeah, it's like requiring a slight tweak to our projections, I guess. Like, you're not looking at him and worried that like he's not going to be a fantasy starter for you. Just he's not going to be that borderline wide receiver one for fantasy. He's more of like a wide receiver two, maybe even low end wide receiver two, because no one expected that Keenan Allen was going to drink from the fountain of youth and that Quentin Johnston was going to like make a deal with the devil to become a good NFL receiver. And all these things have happened, and now they're all producing, and it'll be fine. He'll be an okay starter for you. But yeah, just that ceiling, he's not going to hit that ceiling that maybe you hoped before the season.
Yeah, like the reality is we're showing right now on the screen from Ian Hart. It's a lot of Hart it's pop on this pod. You know, the fact that Keenan Allen is like wide receiver 5 in PPR points, Quentin Johnson 7, Ladd McConkey's 40. I will eat this pen if that's the case by the end of the season. Okay, like that's not going to happen. That will normalize itself. Listen, I'm telling you. Ladd McConkey, wide receiver 40, I'll eat this freaking pen and you know, probably die because of it. It is what it is. But
producer like, Colin, clip that. We're going to need that at the end of the season, potentially.
I should probably not be manifesting these things after we just had that Ashton Judge exactly. Richardson thing. Oh my God, what am I doing here? But no, look, Ladd McConkey is too good. He's playing well. And the fact that this offense is pass heavy, like he will have his moments. Maybe this is just a really stupid meta way to look at it, but every wide receiver has down weeks and like he will randomly pop back up and like all the playing time, like it's he's there. It's not as if he's getting benched for Quentin Johnson or something. Sometimes like you just draft the guy that has the slow start to the season, and there's no way for us and our big brain analysts, you know, in the like there's no way to predict that stuff. It just is random. It's just sports. So I don't know what to tell you about that. I don't know what you do with that, but like sometimes that's what happens. And I think Ladd McConkey will have boom weeks, but you absolutely do have to adjust the expectations at this point because QJ is better than we expected, Keenan's better than we expected, et cetera, et cetera. Like it is what it is. So I think some panic is definitely deserved on, and I'm panicking a little bit about eating a pen. That is for sure. Okay. Next one comes in from Jacoby. I'm ready to put Calvin Ridley in the coping corner. And you know what, Boone? I'm pretty close to being with Jacoby on this one, but I think it still might be a little too early. What do you think?
I'm going total panic. We are very close to coping corner. I'm going total panic. The big argument for him before the season was that he was going to get an incredible amount of volume. And that's just not how this has played out, right? Like you have Elek Iomanner out there. He's basically matched Ridley's production so far, which is awesome from a day three rookie, but not great for Ridley's outlook. Chigakonko at tight end, he's been very involved. And overall, this Titans offense just doesn't look that great. I mean, you know, Denver, the Rams, the Colts, now it's Houston this week for them. Those are very tough defenses to face here. The Colts defense a lot better than we thought. But yeah, 8 catches on 21 targets for Ridley. 21 targets, 29th in the NFL. It's just not the volume we expected. So total panic for me.
15% drop rate. And yeah, the 23.3% target share is lower than we expected because we expected to just be dominating looks. That hasn't happened because when they throw to him, it's not going well. So like he's playing poorly. He's leaving plays on the field. And like that whole analysis of, yeah, like as long as he plays like he did last year, but Cam Ward is good, he will be a value at ADP. Well, he's not playing like he did last year. And like this was a guy I really liked in the offseason. And I am absolutely taking a massive L on this one. So far, Calvin Ridley has just been one of the worst picks you could make, and that really stinks. What a frustrating player. What a weird career that Calvin Ridley has had. Next one we're going to go to here. Some guy says, I don't know if you can trust Jordan Love against a good defense. The good news is that other than their own defense, I think the Browns might have the best defense in the league, so we won't get a defense quite like that on the slate. But I do. What do you think about this one? Like, what's your level of panic on the Packers passing game right now?
I mean, it's only some panic, but that's because it's like kind of played out for the most part as expected, right? Like I had Jordan Love as like a QB2. They spread the ball around. Like Tucker Kraft might be the only like real impact player. Jaden Reed's hurt. So like there's nothing like very surprising about this. I have some panic, but I just didn't think that anybody was going to like blow up from that passing attack in terms of the receivers. And I didn't think Jordan Love was going to be like a meaningful fantasy starter either. So it just depends how you're looking at it. But for me, it's only some panic. I don't really think I'm that worried about it because I didn't think they were going to be that great to begin with.
Last one we have here in the social media submissions. Dylan Gonderman says, I'm panicked that the Bears are going to be inconsistent and just good enough that I keep having to watch all year round. Only the Chicago Bears could get a panic meter submission after they blow out, like have a blowout win. I mean, that is just amazing. That is classic Bears. I've got no panic on the Bears because I think things are trending in the right direction. We'll talk about the Cowboys defense in a second, but that is the performance you want to see in game 3 of your second year quarterback with a new head coach in Ben Johnson.
yeah, it looked much, much better. We knew it was going to take a while. That was the matchup for them to kind of start to get it going. And now, like, their schedule coming up, they get the Raiders next, then a bye, the Commanders defense that just let Geno be a top five fantasy quarterback against them, the Saints, Baltimore is a tougher spot. But after that, the Bengals, the Giants, like, some great, great matchups. I think the Bears are really going to get it going here. So no panic for me.
No panic, but let's just look at the Cowboys' defensive schedule here, because I do think, like, we're going to get to a point where, as Bill Barnwell shows us here, quarterbacks versus the Cowboys, 79.4 QBR, 9.8 yards per attempt. Those same quarterbacks against everyone else, 40.8 QBR, 5.8 yards per attempt. So there is no question that the Cowboys might have the worst defense in the league. And coming up here, we just talked about Jordan Love. Well, guess what? He plays these Cowboys in week four. So jack up the expectations. Week five, the Jets. Week six, Carolina Panthers. Week seven, Washington Commanders. Week eight, Denver Broncos. Oh, there's your Bo Nix bounce back game right there. I mean, the answer here might be just yes. When you see your guys playing the Cowboys, you play them in fantasy, period. End of story.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to figure out early in the season who to target, who to avoid, where you have to downgrade guys. And this is one where we are upgrading all the way. Everybody going against the Cowboys, you're excited to have them in your lineup.
All right, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, it is time to get into Justin Boone's waiver wire pickups for week four and beyond. We'll get into that right after this. All right, it's time to get into the waiver wire picks here heading into week four. Week four, man, Justin Boone, we are flying here through the NFL season. Let's get into the quarterback position. Who are we picking up this week?
Well, overall this week, I will say it's a little more interesting on the waiver wire. I always want to be honest with everyone, and there's been some boring waiver wire weeks so far. This one, a little more interesting, so I think people got to open up the wallet and actually make some plays. Now, quarterback, not necessarily the spot that you're going to do that. There isn't really a standout name here. We're going to have to watch to see if Jaden Daniels is going to be healthy enough to play, because if he's not, Marcus Mariota, he's only 6% rostered. He's going against the Falcons this week. If he gets another start, he's a guy that's like a borderline QB1. And we talked about Mac Jones and Marcus Mariota last week and who should you play. I'm going to give you props here again, Harmon. You said Mariota over Mac Jones, and later in the week when there were the injuries in the 49ers receiving core, I came around on that, and in the end, I had Mariota ranked much higher, but you nailed that one from the jump. Mariota comes out, he has the rushing production, right? 40 rushing yards and a touchdown on the ground against the Raiders, finished with over 20 fantasy points, was well inside the top 10 on the week, and we'll see. If Daniels is back, and the report today was that he's still day-to-day, and when you see Mariota come out and play fairly well and keep things moving, why would you rush Jaden Daniels back? So keep an eye out there. If Mariota's around, if Daniels isn't playing, he would probably be the top guy to pick up and play this week. We could look a little further down here. Geno Smith, 28% rostered. He's going against the Bears. And I mean, he's finished as a top 15 fantasy quarterback in two of his three games with the Raiders. It hasn't necessarily been super pretty, and yet the production is still there. I mentioned it earlier, like this week, right? It didn't look great. And then in garbage time, boom, he comes through. Three touchdowns when it's all said and done. Ends up with the third most fantasy points among quarterbacks for the week, at least heading into the Monday nighter. And listen, he's not the kind of guy that I'm suggesting is going to win you a week. He's not a superstar, but fantasy-wise, he can be like that seat filler for you, can give you a solid floor versus a banged-up Bears defense next week. So Geno's going to be a QB2 streamer option there. And then there's others, like we could talk about guys like Matthew Stafford against the Colts. You can keep an eye on Mac Jones or Tyrod Taylor. You know, we'll see if Brock Purdy or, you know, we'll see if those guys, Justin Fields, are going to be back. Not sure if they're going to play or not, but there's a lot of like streamer types like that, right? So I'd prefer to go a little deeper and talk about a guy that I think could have some long-term value. I've suggested him in the waiver wire column as somebody that you might want to stash, because eventually he's going to start. Well, that eventually could be coming a lot sooner than we expect. Jackson Dart on the Giants, 5% rostered, and we've just seen, I mean, Russell Wilson, we've gotten the full experience. He had that out-of-body game in week two where he just goes nuts, puts up the second most fantasy points among quarterbacks on the week, and then in week three, struggles again. And I saw Adam Schefter tweeted out this afternoon that Brian Daboll left the door open for a potential quarterback change in week four. So Whether it's week four, whether it's beyond, Jackson Dart, his time is coming here. And I wonder, even if they want to put him out there this week, whether they just wait one more week because they're going against the Chargers defense. Maybe not the best spot to put your rookie quarterback out there. But the week after, they get the Saints. So that would be maybe a nice spot to get him on the field. So I think that is, you know, a great pickup. If you're talking about someone long term that could emerge as like a true fantasy starter, we know he can run the ball a little bit. He's somebody that you could grab right now and stash and see either what he looks like this week if he starts, or you got him for when he does eventually get under center.
Can't look much worse than it did on Sunday night for the York Giants. So there is that. Geno is interesting to me, man, because that Bears magic. Like, I did expect the Cowboys to put it on the Bears a little bit more than they did. That being said, they did lose their number one wide receiver earlier in that game. And CeeDee Lamb sounds like he's going to miss like 3 to 4 weeks, which I'm sure we'll talk about more here over the course of this week. But you know, maybe the Bears defense is coalescing a little bit around Dennis Allen in that scheme, but I am skeptical. I'm very skeptical of this whole like Raiders operation. So maybe that's like hanging me up on Geno Smith. And I would definitely like if Jaden Daniels is a play, I definitely would rather have Marcus Mariota than Geno Smith. But I hear you, and I'm trying to put my biases aside that he is a decent little pickup off the waiver wire.
It's when you get to that range of like streamer options, none of them are strong options, right? Like I said, Matthew Stafford against the Colts. How do you feel about that? Like, it's all those guys in that range where you're kind of just picking and choosing. No one really stands out. So again, we're not spending big on any of these quarterbacks, but there is a running back this week that I am willing to empty the entire wallet on. And that is Trey Benson on the Cardinals. And normally I won't even write up guys that are over the 50% rostered mark. That's the cutoff that I use in the column. And yet for this one, I made an exception. He's 52% rostered. It is awful that this comes at the expense of James Conner getting injured. James Conner has been a good fantasy starter for a long time. Seems like an awesome dude, has had a great career. And now you worry on the other side of the season ending injury. What does that mean for him when you think about dynasty, when you think about just him getting back on the field and being able to do anything else? I hope he comes back next season. I hope he comes back strong. And yet you look at this scenario, and this is why they drafted Trey Benson. And this year so far, Benson's actually looked like the more effective runner, I think, right? He's looked like the more explosive option. He's been out producing Connor, right? Connor, he managed 96 scrimmage yards on 28 touches. Benson, 119 yards on just 16 attempts. Connor's the one that was finding the end zone. So fantasy-wise, it looked a little bit better for him. But you watch those games, Benson looked like the guy who could actually maybe help this offense a little more this season. So now he's going to step into this lead back role. He's going to get the bulk of the snaps, the bulk of the touches. Amari Demarcado, he'll spell him a little bit on passing downs, but this immediately puts Benson into that fantasy RB2 conversation, a top 24 weekly option. And there's not going to be many situations, like I said, where I am just going to go all out. I am aggressive on the waiver wire. I've said that before, but to go all out, to empty the entire fab budget on one guy, it can be risky, and yet how many opportunities do you get during a season to get a guy who could be a top 20, top 24 starter to position? We know this is one of them. Don't hold back. Go out and get Benson if he's still out there. We look a little further down, like to the real waiver wire pickups, the guys who might be available in more competitive leagues. Blake Corum is somebody that I've talked about now for a little while. Harmon, I think everybody should be checking out this deep stashes column that I do on Thursdays, because it has already been helpful uncovering a few guys before they became waiver wire pickups the next week. And Corum was the one that I featured last week. And that was after Kyren Williams snaps. They went down a little bit the week before, right? Was playing on 82% of the snaps in week one. That dropped to around 70% in week two. Sean McVay comes out and says, hey, I want a 65-35 split here. And he said stuff like that before. So you take it with a grain of salt, but we just notched it as another data point. And they didn't quite hit that mark this week. You know, it was 75-25 still in snaps. But Corum continuing to be productive on his touches, getting more involved in the receiving game. Now he's up to 97 yards and a touchdown over his last two games. He's coming on as a potential flex option. And this is a guy that we weren't even sure was going to be the number two back. And producer Colin, shout out to him. He was all in on Corum. I was in the Jarquez Hunter backfield. I was thinking he was going to be the one that could step up here. This is Corum is the clear number two in that Rams backfield here. And if he has that flex value, you add that to the league winning upside if something happens to Kyren Williams, and you have a player that just needs to be rostered in way more than 17% of leagues. So really like Corum as a pickup. I think he needs to be rostered everywhere. Some other guys that I think you could pick up this week, and now we're getting a little further down, but Ollie Gordon on the Dolphins, right? We saw his playing time headed in the right direction. We talked earlier about Travis Hunter. It's going in the wrong direction for him. Well, Ollie Gordon, his is moving up. He got 9 carries this week, turned him into 38 yards and a TD. You wish the Dolphins offense as a whole was looking a little bit better so you could make the case that maybe they go back to having 2 productive fantasy backs in that offense. I don't know that that's going to be the case week in and week out, but again, this is another back that's showing that he could have some flex value as the bigger back in that offense, maybe the goal line guy. And I think he would be a pretty clear RB2 if Devon Achane ever got hurt there. So I really like those options. Woody Marks is another one too. And we're going to set a record here for times we're bringing up producer Colin. But before the season, producer Colin told me
he went out
and made a trade to get Woody Marks in Dynasty. He was very excited about it. The season starts and Woody Marks was playing like behind Dario Ogunbowale. It was not even getting used that much. But this is another guy where the usage is headed in the right direction. 11% of the snaps, 27% of the snaps, 48% of the snaps this week. He has passed Ogunbowale. He's passed Dameon Pierce. And now he is that guy behind Nick Chubb and a guy, you know, considering Nick Chubb's age and injury history makes him a little more interesting, but also somebody that can get involved in the passing game. And he is out there in 90% of leagues. So he is certainly worth stashing. And then another guy that I want to highlight as a stash here. We talk sometimes about these, you know, IR stashes. You could go pick them up on the waiver wire, throw them in the IR spot, and then go pick up somebody else. Tajay Spears. Do not forget about Tajay Spears. You know, you don't have to really spend much time on this one because Tajay Spears is somebody I think we talked about a lot in the summer as an intriguing candidate, a guy that you hope would carve out a bigger role in that backfield and be the number 2 behind Tony Pollard. And yet an injury occurs. He was out at the start of the season, but he is going to be back, we think, in a few weeks here. And when he comes back, he's going to go right back to that role. No one else in that Titans backfield has stepped up. He is going to go right back to that role and maybe be able to carve out some touches alongside Tony Pollard while giving you that upside if anything happens to Pollard during the season.
I do want to double back just to Trey Benson because I think he's going to be a big talking point this week. I maybe have a touch more skepticism on Trey Benson than you do, immediately being like a running back to, well, I don't want to say like every week start. I'm not trying to paint you into that corner that that's what you said, but like, kind of in that running back 2 range. I don't know, man. I think so far what we've seen, and look, I have Trey Benson on a dynasty team. I actually would love for me to be very wrong with everything I'm about to say right now. But I think he hasn't really shown consistently in the NFL like the little nuances that you want to see from like a true like high touch back. And even if you go back to Florida State, like he wasn't necessarily that guy. He was more of like a slasher, change of pace, big play option. And I think he was complimenting James Conner really well in that role so far this year. But, man, Conner is so important to this Arizona Cardinals offense. And I actually think the run game in Arizona has not looked good this year. I think they missed Clayton Adams, who flew the coop to be the offensive coordinator. He was their offensive line coach, run game coordinator, flew the coop to Dallas to be their offensive coordinator. And I think their run game has actually looked pretty well designed so far. Their offensive line talent is mid at best. The whole offense is maybe mid at best, as we talked about with some of the Marvin Harrison Jr. concerns. So I just don't – I come away from that game on Sunday, and I said this to Chris Allen yesterday on the show. I just don't even know if the Cardinals are good. And, like, they don't have to be good for Trey Benson to be good in fantasy. But I don't know. I'm a little bit skeptical about Trey Benson being one of those guys that immediately goes to, like, quote, league winner status from, you know, this kind of area of the waiver wire. But there's no question that if he is out there, he's still somebody that you're emptying the wallet on because he absolutely deserves that.
Yeah, I'm not looking at him like, you know, even necessarily like a top 10 guy or anything like that. Nothing like, you know, we saw James Conner at his height, but I'm looking at him as somebody that if Conner wasn't there in those first few games, you know, those 28 touches that he got, how much of that goes to Benson and how much of that goes to Amari Demarcado or anyone else? I think Benson's getting a lot of that. Like, I don't think this is going to turn into like a 50-50 split with Amari Demarcado. So I think Benson's going to pick up the volume. And even if he's not as good as Connor was, even though this year, I do think like he looked like the better back. But I think he's going to get there on volume. And you can certainly get yourself into some trouble fantasy wise by just banking on volume. We talked about Chase Brown and how when the scenario changes and you're hoping for that volume and you're hoping for them to come through that way, how it can really, you could fall on your face there. But I think Benson is going to be a good player who's going to get the volume now. That's going to boost up his stats and RB2 status. He'll have some RB1 weeks, but RB2 status, which I think does make him an every week starter, but not necessarily a true league winner.
Well, for the sake of my dynasty team that needs Trey Benson, I hope you're right, because we need that. The Harmon squad needs that out of the Trey Benson stuff after making him a rookie second round pick in last year's draft. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we run through some pass catchers to grab off the waiver wire right after this. All right, we are back. It is time to continue our look at the waiver wire. We got some wide receivers and tight ends to talk about here. Justin Boone, some interesting wide receivers to rip through here. Who are some guys you're looking at on the waiver wire here heading into week four?
All right, so we talked about, you know, the potential of guys being league winners, who is, who isn't. You don't normally get a league winner at receiver, right? You end up often just picking from guys that are going to be bye week fill-ins or injury fill-ins, flex types, and there's a lot of guys like that. So you don't want to spend too much in this spot. But there's somebody that I want to talk about here, and I want to get your thoughts on it too, because this is more of a long-term play. And yet this is a guy that I think could turn into somebody that might be a difference maker for your fantasy team. And that's Luther Burden in Chicago. Only 11% rostered. Not somebody that I'm looking to start in week four. You know, we just got a glimpse of like maybe what that ceiling could kind of offer if his role continues to grow. Ben Johnson said that he wanted to start getting Burden more involved. And that's exactly what happened in week three, right? He caught three passes, 101 yards and a score. He gained another 7 yards on the ground. I will caution that he only played 29% of the snap. So he's far from a full-time player. That's why I'm saying this is more of a long-term thing. You know, until that playing time just increases significantly here, you know, from a fantasy scoring perspective, it's going to be very sporadic. You're not going to get performances like we got last week. But the way I see it, there's just, you know, so few waiver wire wide receivers that could potentially challenge the kind of upside that I see from Burton here. You know, I know you've suggested the possibility of like DJ Moore being traded at some point. Maybe that's a little less likely after the big win on Sunday, but I do think Burton is going to carve out a bigger role over time here. That kind of makes him like a high price stash. Not that I'm saying you need to spend a lot to go get him, but somebody that you're going to want to spend a little more on. I think I have him right now recommended at a 7% bid, which is probably a little bit high. And yet still, I'm saying that because I think he's somebody that could potentially come on down the road and actually make a difference. So I'll pause there, Harmon. I want to get your thoughts on Burton.
Okay. I'm glad you want to talk about this because I think this is really interesting too. I think when we were asked at some point, maybe it was on this show. I don't know. We there's so much damn content, but like for a stash, and you know, I said Luther Burton is one that is a good candidate because he is, I think, somebody that could pop in the second half of the season, especially as the Bears' offense is trending in the right direction. Now, people are going to look at the fantasy point totals and obviously the 100 yards and the touchdown and that signature play on the pitch back from DeAndre Swift where he scores that monster touchdown. I think like, okay, yeah, Luther Burden got a promotion. He actually did not get any sort of playing time bump at all. In week one, 17 offensive snaps, 9 routes. In week two, 11 snaps, 5 routes. In week three, 17 snaps, 9 routes. Route participation's 31%, which is the highest so far, but it's not like a big bump. Okay, so he is still stuck as the fourth receiver on this team. I still think though, Boone, that they drafted him for now. I still think that they drafted him to be DJ Moore's replacement, not like take Olamide Zaccheaus's kind of, you know, middling little slot job at some point. Also worth noting, Colson Loveland picked up a serious injury. I know you're going to talk about Cole Kmet later on here in the tight end section, but that might be a reason that they're going to play less 12 personnel. They play more 11 personnel. Maybe we do get more Luther Burden in the mix in that particular scenario. But yeah, if they are making Luther Burden an outside receiver, I actually kind of think that's really good for him in Dynasty. I think he makes more sense as like a flanker, like a DJ Moore replacement than like a slot player. So he is purely a stash, but if this Bears offense is ticking upward, like, I think we have seen promise like built upon from week one to week two to week three, then Burden could be a guy in the second half of the season, not unlike when St. Brown as a rookie was a late season guy for the Detroit Lions. Obviously, Ben Johnson was not the offensive coordinator there, but he was a little bit more empowered as the play caller, not the play caller, but more involved in the offense in St. Brown's rookie season after they let go of Anthony Lynn that year in Detroit.
Okay. So the good notes there. I think, you know, still looking at him, like I said, as like a longer term pickup here, somebody that we're still stashing. We're not grabbing him and
you can't
for
play
that production
him next week,
last
right?
week.
Like,
but
yeah, you can't do that.
And I will say the Colson Loveland injury doesn't really sound like it's that serious. Apparently the update today is that he might even have a chance to play this week. It's a hip issue. So yeah, hopefully he's healthy and there's no worries there. But we'll keep an eye on that one as the week goes along here. Now, I want to talk about the receiver who had just a massive game, the biggest fantasy game from a receiver this year. And yet I want to just like tamp down the expectations moving forward on him a little bit. That is Trey Tucker on the Raiders. Like the fact that he's had two pretty good fantasy games so far, that's great. I think he's just still going to be the same kind of player where he's playing a ton. So we'll give him that. He is like a full-time player in this offense. That is awesome, right? Playing over 90% of the snaps, has these two strong fantasy games. And yet I think he's just going to be a volatile guy for fantasy. So you go out, you pick him up, you don't spend much to get him. You use him if you need to, you know, we'll have bye weeks coming up. Injuries are certainly hitting. Maybe get him in your lineup as like that flex, but he's always going to be that volatile flex. I don't see him emerging as a player who's going to consistently be putting up strong stats. We'll give you a chance at the end to talk about that because I want to mention a few other receivers here that are kind of in the same range. But Trey Tucker is somebody you can certainly go add this week. Just don't get overly excited about that huge game in week three. Darnell Mooney, he came back. We talked about the Falcons offense earlier. He's 45% rostered, so he's up near that cutoff. But starting to get back in the mix, 4 catches, 44 yards this week. It was on 11 targets, right? So the efficiency, not great, but he's coming back from the injury. So hopefully knocks the rust off. And I think we'll see some better stat lines from him moving forward. Troy Franklin, I'll bring him up again. We talked about him last week. And this is why I said what I said about Trey Tucker, where these guys who, yes, they're getting the playing time, but are they going to get the consistent targets week in and week out? I hope that Franklin does become more of a consistent player, but right now the usage is strong, but the actual production is going to be a little spotty here and there. So it was unfortunate that he took a step back and that, you know, you had Cortland Sutton have the big game this week, but he ran almost as many routes as Cortland Sutton. It was just two fewer routes this week. So that's worth noting. Moving forward though, he's another wide receiver for flex option. So is Alec Iemanner. Man, this dude, he was one of the first ones that I hit on in that deep stash column, basically just matching Calvin Ridley's production so far, which is incredible from a day three receiver, scoring touchdowns, doing it all. Not insane stats so far, but really, really good for a day three pick. So he remains on the flex radar. Christian Kirk, who we talked about earlier, 34% rostered. You know, he came back this week, first week of action back, 67% of the snaps, 8 targets. He's somebody that's a vet who could grow into the role that he's had in the past where he can be productive. And then a stash guy, I'll just mention Jalen Coker. We talked about him last week, but Jalen Coker's on IR. Baby. Another one of these players that you go out, you put him in your IR spot and you benefit down the road.
Yeah. I thought it was encouraging that Franklin was still on the field a good bit. So I'm with you that like that's more important to me than the production. And if you just like if you're a dynasty buyer, if you're you know kind of bullish on Franklin, that's more important than the production. Trey Tucker definitely felt pretty fluky. Commander secondary, a little bit of garbage time, but he's actually I think played all right this year. Did a little charting on him and like he's fast. I'll give him that. He is absolutely a fast player. Not a lot else to talk about, though, in terms of the rest of his game. Let's quickly hit on tight ends. It's a lot of the same names that we've hit so far this year, so I'll let you rip on these ones.
Yeah, we don't need to spend any time on Harold Fannin Jr. I've made my case on him, but somehow he's still just 47% rostered, so he's still
just pick him up, people.
Weeks.
Pick him up so Boone doesn't have to talk
about
him every week.
I don't have to talk about him next week. Go and get him. The guy that I want to highlight is Isaiah Likely, and he was somebody else that I talked about in that deep stashes column last week. He's on track, I think, to return in week 4. We still haven't seen the Ravens play this week. They play Monday night. We're recording this just before the Monday nighter, so we'll see what happens in that game in terms of Mark Andrews, but Mark Andrews so far, so disappointing. 1 catch each week, 7 yards total this season, no touchdowns. Maybe he'll turn it around and come out and have a big game, and that'll change our outlook on this one. But right now, I'm projecting that Isaiah Likely is going to come back and take on a big role in this offense and potentially pass Mark Andrews as the starter as the season goes along. So you go out and get him, you stash him for now. If you're looking for like a streamer in week 4, though, Brenton Strange, 25% rostered, hasn't found the end zone, but he's playing a ton. You know, two decent fantasy games so far, 4 for 59 in the opener, 6 for 61 this past week. Dyami Brown's banged up in the receiver core. I think that could actually help Brenton Strange. So think about him. And then Chika Conquo. Chika Conquo very quietly putting up okay stats in that Titans offense. Okay stats for the Titans offense, I should say, I suppose. But 5 for 66 in week 3. Another guy you could consider as a streaming option. And yeah, you mentioned that Cole Kmet could be a potential streamer this week. That's if Colston Loveland is out. We've seen Kmet come up, be a fantasy starter in the past. Maybe he could do that again if Loveland's not out there this week.
All right, Boone, real quickly, give us a deep sleeper on the waiver wire. And I don't even need to back you up on this one because people know what I think about this player.
Yeah, I know you like this guy. Another day 3 rookie, already a contributor. Torrey Horton on the Seahawks. Touchdowns in back-to-back weeks. You know, just clocked his highest route share this season at 76%. And what happens if Cooper Kupp falls off as the year goes along and Torrey Horton takes over that number 2 job? So very intriguing as a deep sleeper who is available in 98% of leagues. Go get him.
I've got Torrey Horton on dynasty teams for sure, but a few benches as well. My God, nothing would make me happier than to see Torrey Horton crush it this year. Nothing makes me happier than talking waiver wire with Justin Boone and the People's Panic Meter. Boone, this was awesome. Great episode by you. For the people out there, remember, we are reading again in 2025. So go to the website and read Justin Boone's full waiver wire breakdown. And of course, he typed that deep stash column. Make sure you're hitting that as well, because that is a gem of a piece. We're reading again in 2025, damn it. That is the theme of this show. That is going to do it for today's show. On Tuesday, Ray Garvin is back. He joins me for another edition of the Data Dump. We give you 10 stats that you need to know heading into week 4. That is going to be live right here, 5 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Until then, we are out.